Keeping ahead of our adversaries. Every software system is potentially vulnerable in ways that aren't always imagined during development. For example, pacemakers and implantable cardioverter defibrillators, which monitor and regulate cardiac rhythms, typically provide wireless access to healthcare providers so that they can modify settings and collect telemetry. However, a malicious user could transmit commands to ICDs to collect private data or change the device's therapy settings. Recently, well-known hacker Barnaby Jack claimed to have developed software that let him shock patients within a 50-foot radius. Anticipating such potential threats, doctors proactively disabled the wireless features of former US Vice President Dick Cheney's pacemaker. Malicious attacks' potential to cause real and diverse harm holds true for numerous other software systems. For example, University of Michigan researchers demonstrated how easy it was to take control of a traffic light system. A person could ensure that the lights were always green along his or her route, or could seriously disrupt traffic by turning all the lights red. Similarly, University of California, San Diego, and University of Washington researchers used a car's telematics unit to remotely disable the brakes, turn off the headlights, and manipulate dashboard gauges. White-collar crime involving data breaches are rampant, and governments are investigating the potential for terrorist attacks on power grids, airplanes, and other public services. Technology is a double-edged blade. Although computers let us pursue ever more impressive innovations, we're likewise subjected to growing possibilities for abuse. So how do we build secure products that are hardened against adversarial attacks? Let's take a look. Many steps to improve security can be taken at various stages of software development. However, an important place to begin is with a dedicated analysis of potential threats. Without a sound understanding of the possible threats against a given system, it's unlikely that developers will be able to adequately defend against them. Surprisingly, this step is often performed hastily or skipped. One problem is that developers often assume they understand all common attack patterns and therefore fail to explore each system's specific vulnerabilities. Alternatively, they might assume they can patch in security later in the design by following accepted security policies and procedures. To some extent, each system is unique. Even supposing that the system components are well understood and previously have been composed in the same way, the ways a deployed system is used, misused, or reappropriated can introduce unanticipated security vulnerabilities. Building a secure system requires proactive, rigorous analysis of the threats to which it might be exposed, followed by systematic transformation of those threats into security-related requirements. These requirements can then be tracked throughout the development lifecycle. In this way, threat modeling aims to first identify attackers' potential abilities and goals, and secondly, catalog possible threats that the system must be designed to mitigate. We consider threat modeling a requirements activity. The most benefit comes from understanding what security requirements are needed and using those requirements to drive architecture decisions, to develop test strategies, and to engage in other software development activities. However, in reality, threat modeling techniques vary and can be applied to both existing and greenfield systems. Different techniques are more suited to different software development activities and to different development and domains. Some techniques are like checklists, enumerating possible threats developers should consider in the context of their system. Others are less deterministic and try to inject more creativity to stimulate thinking about unusual attack vectors. All techniques encourage developers to think more critically about their system and about ways to subvert it. This contrasts with the more usual approaches that focus on functionality. As you might expect, developers find it exceptionally difficult to be complete and consistent and to truly put themselves in the shoes of an attacker. To assist threat analysis, Tamara Denning, Batya Friedman, and Tadayoshi Kono developed the security cards. These security cards consist of 42 cards divided into four categories or dimensions. The dimensions we call human impact, adversaries' motivations, adversaries' resources, and finally, adversaries' methods. So we have human impact, and then the adversary's motivations, resources, and methods. Here we illustrate how the cards might serve as starting points to explore potential threats to a technological system. In this case, the example I'm going to talk about is an ICD. This thought exercise is only to explore what these software development processes would look like when applied to a system concept. We don't intend to make statements regarding current ICD security or what security considerations have been incorporated into the development process. So the first dimension is the dimension of human impact. This dimension explores how security breaches could affect humans. The impacts range from personal privacy violations to widespread societal impact. Threat modeling sessions could start by ranking the human impact cards according to their relevance to the system under consideration. In this case, a highly relevant card is the physical well-being card. It asks us to think about how a misused or compromised ICD could impact people's physical well-being. However, we could also consider cards such as emotional well-being. For example, patients are aware of the threat to their health, financial well-being, or relationships, and an example of that would be if the attack aims to discredit the ICD company, or personal data. And an example of this is if the attacker wants to use the identifying personal data stored on the device. The second type of card represents adversaries' motivations. This dimension explores why someone might want to attack a system. It helps provide a framework to explore a potential attack scope and its intended targets. And I'll give you some examples of these. The malice or revenge card might lead us to consider the situation in which an adversary attacks the ICD user owing to extreme emotion. Other motivation-related cards could include self-promotion, and an example of that would be if the attacker wants to demonstrate technical prowess, or diplomacy or warfare, with an example that the attacker aims to take down a political enemy who happens to have an ICD. Considering potential adversaries' motivations helps determine what resources they might have and helps us to construct attacker profiles. This leads us to the third dimension, the adversary's resources. This dimension explores assets an adversary might use to launch an attack. These assets include hardware and software tools, technical expertise, and various forms of influence. In this case, we select the expertise card and consider the hacker's potential technical skills. Another relevant card could be a future world, which considers potential future attacks, given that interest exists in increasing the capabilities of remote checkups. We might also consider impunity, and an example here would be if the attack might be difficult to pin on a particular person or to prosecute that person. Another card could be inside knowledge, where a former employee used his detailed proprietary knowledge about the architecture of the system in order to attack it. And then the final dimension relates to the adversary's methods. And this dimension explores how an adversary might attack the system, including technology, coercion, and abusing logistical and bureaucratic processes. We could, for example, select the technological attack card, given that researchers have previously demonstrated such attacks. We also could consider cards such as multi-phase attack, where the adversary tampers with software in the doctor's office responsible for sending commands to the ICD. Other cards in this dimension include indirect attack or attack cover-up. Exhaustively cataloging threats is of limited use if we don't use the information to improve the software we're developing. To illustrate moving from threats to requirements, suppose our threat model contains the following threat written from a malicious user's perspective. As an IT specialist with intent to physically harm an ICD patient, I am going to launch an attack on the device that will change the intended effects on the patient's heart. We need to identify and specify requirements that prevent this adversary from achieving this goal. The first step is to identify vulnerabilities that enable each specific threat. There are many potential vulnerabilities and issues that could facilitate an attack on an ICD, so we'll consider a few of them here. The ICD would be vulnerable if it lacks an authentication mechanism, or the adversary acquires authentication by stealing login information or eavesdropping. To execute such an attack, the adversary must successfully transmit a valid command to the ICD. For the attack to succeed, the ICD patient should either be unaware of the attack and therefore unable to take remedial action, such as moving out of transmission range, or be immediately incapacitated. We can also analyze the associated vulnerabilities, evaluate possible mitigations, and then specify them as candidate requirements. The scenario in which the ICD has no authentication mechanism is a potential problem for embedded medical devices in which power consumption is crucial. To address this problem, we consider specifying the requirement ICD commands will be accepted only from verified controllers. To address a scenario in which the attacker requires authentication, we consider specifying the requirement all data transmitted to the ICD must be encrypted. However, we have to be careful. We must examine both the requirements and balance them against the need for additional processing, which would drain the battery life. Furthermore, decreased accessibility could inhibit access to the ICD in an emergency, which is also considered an important requirement. So we might consider an additional or a different requirement. In lieu of limiting access to verified controllers and encrypting data, a next best option might be to provide an audible warning to ICD patients each time the device starts communicating with a controller. Such a requirement would clearly be a trade-off. It's unlikely to provide sufficient security in the face of Barnaby Jack's shock attack, for example, but it might partially protect the user from privacy invasions or unauthorized reconfigurations. Security requirements are driven by the threat modeling process, but are ultimately constrained by hardware and software trade-offs. However, being able to maintain traceability from specific requirements back to the threats they address will likely be useful as trade-offs among requirements are negotiated. It's important to ensure that some mitigation for important threats is maintained, even if the form of that mitigation needs to adapt and evolve. Luckily, most of us don't have to build systems that have to resist attacks by determined nations and whose failure would cause people to die. Attempting to provide perfect security for such systems not only isn't necessary, but also most certainly wouldn't be cost-effective. Another benefit of threat modeling, and according to some people the primary benefit, is documenting what threats won't be mitigated. Without a documented, consistent understanding of what threats are out of scope, systems typically end up with extremely poor security. For example, many stories exist of systems whose password reset functionalities totally undermined all the other security features. After all, an attacker only needs to target the weakest point in the system's defenses. As another example, many organizations decide that it's not worth building technical solutions to counter insider attacks. However, without explicitly documenting this decision, it's all too easy to overlook that the system must be built so that after employees have been fired, their knowledge of system passwords and procedures can't be used against their ex-employer. In the end, we all agree that security requirements are necessary. However, writing them without engaging in threat modeling will likely lead to cookie-cutter requirements that capture the same old problems. We will probably remember to include standard security functions, although we might not remember to specify them in the requirements document. It's far less likely that we'll think about specific threats that might be unique to our system. So threat modeling is an essential activity that should form a natural prelude to the requirements process. I'd like to thank the co-authors of my column this edition. They are Tamara Denning, Tadayoshi Kono, Forrest Schull, and Samuel Weber.